From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Taking no prisoners, this is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Unleashed on TNT. I'm your host, Mark Morano. All right. They really don't want you eating meat. And I mean, they really don't want you eating meat. The United States government is now trying to authorize $15 million as part of electronic tagging for cows and bison and animal agriculture in the United States. And this is the first step. They're now going after surveillance of cows. Clip one. Take a listen.
Madam Chair, as a cattleman myself who interacts with and supports thousands of cattlemen in Kentucky, I rise in support of Ms. Hageman's very important amendment, which prevents funds from being used to mandate electronic identification ear tags for cattle and bison. The cattlemen in Kentucky know this isn't just another extra expense for them. It's the beginning of the end of the American rancher, of the American cattleman. It's the beginning of the end of multi-generational farms in Kentucky, because this is an on and off switch that will prevent farmers from marketing their cattle if they're not in compliance with thousands of rules, never-ending list of rules. And so this is why we should oppose it. We should quit listening. I implore my colleagues who've been lobbied on this issue. We've all been lobbied on this one. I implore my colleagues to quit listening to the lobbyists who pretend to represent farmers and start listening to their farmers back home and support Ms. Hageman's amendment. I yield back.
Do you see what's going on here? That was Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky, one of the best United States congressmen we have. But I don't want to say by far, but one of the best, certainly. Phenomenal. He's drawing our attention to this electronic tracking of cattle in the United States to limit beef production and to dominate the small ranchers. This, and the idea is they're not going to be able to sell their cattle at auction for food production, for slaughter, unless the government, the United States Federal Department of Agriculture, gives it their stamp. The electronic tracking device has to be, you know, they have to be in compliance with whatever federal diktats are, or you're not going to be able to sell your beef. It's a great way to say, hey, we're not banning beef, but these cattlemen aren't following the regulations. So I'm sorry, their beef can't be sold. So we're not banning it at all. They're just out of compliance. Well, where did the compliance come from? It's brand new. This is just to give you a little bit more detail. This is an agreement between the Department of Agriculture to continue to provide the tags and related infrastructure needed to comply with the federal animal disease traceability rule, CFR 86, including no less than $15,000 for electronic identification tags related infrastructure needed for stakeholders to comply with the proposed rule. Use of electronic identification ear tags as an official identification in cattle and bison. And they're trying to finalize this rule. It's just another instance of the permission-based society not wanting to say outright, we're banning meat. But we're going to make it so hard. And who is it going after? The small ranchers. They're not going to be able to afford these compliance costs and having all these new federal regulations. Same thing we saw in the Netherlands with the net zero restrictions on nitrogen, on methane. They're coming after your meat, and they're doing it in crafty, creative ways. Thank God we have a congressman calling it off. This is by no means done. It's a draft measure, a proposed measure. But let's hope this can be defeated, because there's no doubt where they want to go with the meat ban on meat. Okay, this is a big couple big stories on EV. I've got to give these as breaking news, both globally and in the United States. Sobering up, the European Union may scrap its plans to ban internal combustion engines by 2035. After a vote in Brussels this week, I mentioned this earlier this week, the proposal, the majority of European Parliament Commission would favor something that no longer automatically classifies electric cars as carbon neutral. Well, why would they not be considered carbon neutral? Well, there's a study out. Electric cars release more toxics than gas-powered vehicles and are worse for the environment. They take 500,000 pounds of materials to make one electric car. But here's the kicker, and this is the breaking news. CNBC feature article, actual headline, EV euphoria is dead. This is corporate media, CNBC. Automakers are scaling back or delaying their electric vehicle plans as consumers' demand for EVs hasn't shown up, unquote. The euphoria is dead. Well, CNBC, I would have one thing to say to that. There was never any euphoria to begin with. The only euphoria that existed that you could talk about for electric vehicles was from the automakers excited to get government subsidies, tax breaks, and other favors from the government in order to enforce this policy, the corporate government collusion. But guess what? It still wasn't enough. The public demand was not there. And as CNBC reports, automakers from Ford Motor Company, General Motors, to Mercedes-Benz, to Volkswagen, to Jaguar, to Land Rover, to Aston Martin, scaling back or delaying electric vehicle plans. Rental cars like Avis getting rid of a third of their car fleet, EVs, saying EVs have high maintenance costs and have no demand. This is it. They tried, they failed, but here's the problem. And this is as you become a student of history and a student of how government in today's world works, and always, I guess always government, but particularly with the administrative bureaucratic state. Expansive government works this way. They're not going to look at this as, well, this idea doesn't fly. You know, the public doesn't want these. They have range anxiety. They're not actually green. And you can go on and on. You know, they're just so far from being labeled green. And European Union may recognize that. But what they're doing, this is proof to the ruling class, governing elite, that they didn't try hard enough, that we didn't ban the gas-powered car fast enough, that we didn't subsidize and mandate EVs enough. And they're going to look at this as not any kind of failure of their plan. They're going to look at it as we need more rules, regulations, mandates, and money and subsidies. We need to do that. That's the way they look at this. They don't look at it as failure. They look at it as failure of effort on government. And government needs to double, triple, and quadruple their efforts, including subsidies, mandates, and spending. That, my friend, is how government works with the gas-powered cars and with across all sectors. If something fails, it's not because it was a bad idea mandated by government and it just absolutely sucked. It's because we didn't spend enough, we didn't mandate enough, we didn't regulate enough, we didn't ban enough. And that's the way this will be seen. Sadly. CNBC goes on, though consumer demand for EVs hasn't shown up, I love this, sales of electric vehicles are still predicted to increase in the years to come. Well, okay, here you go. None of our predictions have come true about EV sales, but don't worry. We're still predicting predicted to increase in the years to come. Ding! This is exactly like the climate scam. Polar bear numbers are at or near record highs, but don't worry. Don't worry. More polar bears than ever, healthy, prospering pup. Don't worry. Our predictions are still on track for 100 years from now. They're going to be decimated. It's worse than we thought for the polar bears. And so that's the way they absorb this. This is corporate media still spinning. And though consumer demand for EVs hasn't shown up, quote, the vehicles are still predicted to increase in sales in years ago. So it's all going to be okay. Just stay the course, banning, mandating, subsidies, tax breaks. Let's limit the creation of new gas stations. Let's stop the car loans by corporate banks to people who want to buy gas-powered cars. Let's have the World Bank threaten automakers that the international financial community is going to stop the production and funding of gas-powered cars. Why not? Because we are saving the planet and we aren't wrong. If things don't work out the way we thought, it's because government didn't regulate, tax, and spend enough. Bingo. That's the way the world works. Okay. This you may enjoy. Hollywood actor Robert De Niro has come out on Bill Maher's show and made some really entertaining comments about Donald Trump. I got two different clips here. The first one's about a minute. This is Robert De Niro telling you why we should all be voting for Joe Biden and the problem with Donald Trump. Clip two.
The bottom line is it's Biden versus Trump. We want to live in a world that we want to live in and enjoy living in, or live in a nightmare. Vote for Trump and you'll get the nightmare. Vote for Biden and we'll be back to normalcy.
Yeah. So why is Trump winning? I mean, the New York Times poll this week came out, and maybe this will change it with the State of the Union address, but Trump was beating him rather soundly. It was quite a warning light, 48-43, also winning way more among women than he had before, winning outright Latinos. What do you attribute that to?
I don't know. I just don't want to feel the way I did, and many of us don't, after the election in 2016, where we couldn't believe that it happened. The guy is a total monster. And anybody, I don't understand it. I guess they get behind that kind of logic. They want to fuck with people, screw them, because they're unhappy about something. He's such a mean, nasty, hateful
person. All right. My favorite line of what he said was, I don't want to feel that way like I did in 2016. This is about Robert De Niro's feelings. He doesn't want to feel like a loser for voting for the losing candidate. And he doesn't want to feel that sense of dread that someone he disagrees with is now going to be president. He doesn't want that. And so this guy's a monster if you support him. He actually believes this stuff. I love when he also said that voting for Joe Biden keeps everything normal. Yeah, like we've been in a normal world with inflation, debt, runaway spending, international failures from the pullout of Afghanistan. Yes, we should have pulled out, not the way we did. Expanded wars, still Ukraine funding, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, all the COVID stuff, if they could have got away with it, especially when Biden was elected, he wanted to have a ban on interstate travel. They held the line on the vaccine mandates. I mean, so it depends on what your definition of normal is to think that Joe Biden is doing a great job. But Robert De Niro, another thing he said was, I'm not sure why Trump is leading in every poll with Hispanics, with women, with African-Americans, historic high support. And Robert De Niro, I'm just not sure. Yeah, I don't know. But here's clip two. Robert De Niro goes a little further. And even if you watch this, even the audience of Bill Maher's HBO show Real Time sort of giggles at the absurdity of what he's saying. Clip three, Robert De Niro.
Because I can't see any good in him. Nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing redeemable in him. And whoever the people are who want to vote for him, and there look like intelligent people around there, somebody, for some reason, it can't be. It cannot be. If he wins the election, you won't be on the show anymore. He'll come looking for me. There'll be things that happen that none of us can imagine. That's what happens in that kind of a dictatorship, which is what he says. Let's believe him. Take him at his word.
Yeah, I showed you the clip a few days ago of all the MSNBC hosts saying we're going to be in a dictatorship if Donald Trump wins. I just don't understand what he's saying. The audience giggled when he said, you won't be here. Bill Maher, Donald Trump's going to get Bill Maher taken off of HBO. That's how serious this is. I mean, first of all, Donald Trump will be a boon to CNN again, corporate media, all the late night comedians, because they'll be able to pander to their base with, you know, the lame recycled Trump jokes that they always like to do. I just don't know what reality he's living in to think that Trump's a dictator. Trump is pro-censorship. I mean, none of this makes any sense because everything about Trump was about deregulation. I think Trump, the only criticism I had, the biggest criticism, was what he did with COVID. I mean, Yeah, and this is what Robert De Niro should be happy that Trump listened to Fauci. He was duped by Fauci in March of 2020. So that's a little snapshot of what Hollywood's thinking. So why are these actors coming out and saying the most absurd things? Trump is a monster. Well, Chris Cuomo, the brother of Andrew Cuomo, New York, explains why Well, this is the reason. He reveals the reason why everyone is beside themselves with Trump. And it was also revealed in the question by Bill Maher to Robert De Niro. Trump's leading in the polls. But this is clip four, Chris Cuomo on how he sees the 2024 presidential race.
You know, this guy's going to win, by the way. This guy's going to win. I've never seen people behind someone like this before. I've never been to rallies like that before. For anyone, Obama didn't even have rallies like that.
That's, of course, Chris Cuomo talking about Donald Trump, saying he's going to win. He's going to win. And this is terrifying the establishment right now. And we can only hope that happens. I've had many guests on the show. I think it comes down to election integrity. It comes down to whether they can, you know, jail Donald Trump and, of course, bankrupt him and get everyone around him, but in a way that makes him stronger for people. They realize, I mean, at some point, you just realize this is, you know, it's kangaroo courts and silliness and nonsense. So I don't make predictions here. I just think it comes down to those, like, what, five or six key swing states. And I don't know. I have to look at each state by state, look at the election reforms that have happened since 2020. Can Donald Trump get a fair election in those key states? You know, with the mail-in balloting, unverified. That's what this election, to me, comes down to. I don't care about how big a margin Joe Biden wins in California. Look at all the extra millions of people vote. It's meaningless. We're talking about electoral college and whether Donald Trump can win. And of course, we're talking about the key swing states. By the way, Chris Cuomo has really changed his tune. He's come out now criticizing the establishment. He seems open to a lot of conservative ideas, anti-Great Reset ideas. He's been on a lot of conservative podcasts. He's trying to rehabilitate himself, obviously. But I can't remember his scandal. I don't think his brother had the sexual harassment scandal, which, again, was weird. It's almost like the establishment said, get both Cuomos, we're done with them. And then they were just booted off. Andrew Cuomo, the charges against him were very strange. And this, the establishment and media just went along. He was gone. And Chris Cuomo, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the key reason he left CNN was because he defended his brother, had some meeting with him. It was just kind of an odd thing, and they got rid of him as well. And of course, now he's trying to, you know, find a new niche, how you say that word, in the media. So, all right, the other last clip here, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the congresswoman, shows you how to deal with the mainstream media when they ask you absurd questions and are rude and insulting. And I don't have the whole, this is about only 30 seconds, but the whole issue, talked for over a minute with this reporter, very polite, answering all her questions. And then the reporter goes in for the jugular. And this is the clip, Marjorie Taylor Greene talking to a BBC reporter, the way it ought to be done, clip five.
And can you tell me why so many people that support Donald Trump love conspiracy theories, including yourself? He seems to attract lots of conspiracy theorists.
Well, let me tell you, you're a conspiracy theorist, and the left and the media spreads more conspiracy theories. We like the truth. We like supporting our Constitution, our freedoms, and America first. So,
what about Jewish space lasers? Tell us about Jewish space lasers.
No, why don't you go talk about Jewish space lasers, and really, why don't you off? How about that?
Thanks.
She's very polite in saying that. And then the reporter's like, thanks. That's sort of the way you have to deal with this. I mean, when reporters just want to spin their narrative, corporate media has been doing this for decades. This is one of the reasons I loved Vivek Ramaswamy. Remember, it's not Vivek, it's Vivek like cake. He just handled the media brilliantly. And I thought that was a great moment by Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. And not even a huge, I don't really follow her, not a huge fan, but I like her policies and everything, but some of her style, like, remember last year screaming and booing during Biden's State of the Union. I mean, I just think she likes to really rev it up at times, but that was appropriate. And I think that was actually, you know, maybe, yeah, I don't know if I would have cursed, but maybe I would have, but it was just very well done and very well handled by her, you know, Jewish space lasers. I don't even know what they're even getting at there. So anyway, when we come back, we're going to be joined by our guest, James Woodhuizen. He's a physics graduate, sitting professor of forecasting innovation at the School of Engineering at the London South Bank University. And we will be talking about China. We will be talking about net zero and a whole range of issues. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be right back after these messages.
TNT's Chris Smith.
I can tell you that Donald Trump is projected to win primaries in the states of Texas, Minnesota, Colorado, Virginia, Maine, Massachusetts, Arkansas, Alabama, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and North Carolina. And in a little bit of a turn up, the northeastern state of Vermont looks to have gone to his rival, his final rival, the former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley. Now, Nikki Haley's team has said that she won't be speaking tonight. That has been construed by many of the reporters in that location as she's about to exit the race in the next 24 hours.
Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Sometimes, a car comes along that changes everything. With innovations never thought possible, and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VW Bee. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you'll never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
Welcome back to Unleashed on TNT. I'm your host, Mark Morano. All right. Well, joining the program now is James Woodhausen, visiting professor of London South Bank University, journalist, occasional broadcaster, I believe a forecasting expert, if I'm not mistaken. Welcome to the program, Mr. Woodhausen. James.
Mark, a pleasure.
Thank you for coming on. All right. You've been talking a lot recently about, I guess you could call it, the folly of net zero and what's happening throughout Europe. How is net zero, in your view, landing in Europe? Is it going swimmingly? Because years ago, all we heard about was the green transition and how wonderful it was going to be, and electricity was going to be cheaper, solar and wind were cheaper, and EVs were going to be taking over, and it was just going to be an energy panacea, and the earth would be smiling. How's it going so far in Europe?
Well, people aren't buying it, Mark. I think you and your viewers know that. They may have seen Dutch, Spanish, French, English tractors on the streets. Farmers in Europe are not backward coming forward. I know we're supposed to be pusillanimous in this continent, but if you have farmers on tractors spraying the police stations with manure, you know, you really get to learn what's going down. And they are cross because their livelihoods are threatened, because the EU wants to take away more space from their land and devote it to insects, which eventually, of course, we will eat. So, you know, they're very disappointed by that. But I think what was interesting about your monologue before I came on is that the tide isn't turning yet against net zero and electric vehicles, but it's kind of not going the way it was. It's going to be a long struggle if I mix the metaphors. You know, the tide isn't going out on electric vehicles just yet or net zero. There's turbulence, more turbulence than in the last year and a half. But we've got a big, long road in front of us and battle to do.
Well, what I keep saying, like, about net zero, what happens in the whole climate agenda is years ago, you go back 2005, Arnold Schwarzenegger, governor of California, he was praised as a climate hero for passing the California climate bill, right? But nothing affected California until years after he left office. So he got away with a virtue signal without cost. But I believe now that we're at the point, both in Europe and the United States, where all the virtue signaling has real costs. So my question to you is, as the public becomes aware, like, wait, they want to ban gas-powered cars. Wait, they want to stop and start rationing meat production. Wait, they're going to start limiting agriculture and cutting away fertilizer and reducing crop yields. Don't you think once the realization hits, and it's slowly hitting now, that there'll be massive blowback? Or do you think people are so, I guess I don't want to use the word program, but so docile that they'll just continue to go along with the rhetoric of net zero?
I don't think anybody's programmed, Mark, in the 21st century any more than the 20th century. I think it's a longstanding media trope that, you know, we're all stupid and can be manipulated. It's a Democratic Party idea. I'm on the left myself. I hate the Democrats. You know, I think that that's extremely patronizing about the working class to take that view. So I think there will be pushback, but pushback alone or just manure at the police stations doesn't do it. It needs analysis. It needs intellect. It needs what you call data, what we call data. It needs all of those things, and it needs sound arguments. I find the arguments of many climate skeptics about net zero unconvincing. I think you have to concede when your opponents are right in order to ram home your point more firmly. Of course, the advocates of net zero are not always right. But when they are right, let's say when they're right. But I think give it a year, two, three, 5 years, I think then it'll be much tougher for them. Not months. It's going to take a bit of time.
Well, just explain, Ellen, when you say concede their rights. So you're looking for a more like a back and forth. But what, like, on the net zero thing, give an example of where you think a better strategy would be conceding their right.
Well, the thing is, when they say the temperature is warming of the world, you know, you've got to go through a lot of different kinds of measurement of temperature to be able to rebut their thesis. You can't just say, oh, well, this is all, you know, right-wing plot got up by the World Economic Forum. That doesn't do it. It's no good saying follow the money. Do you know the story about follow the money, the phrase? The phrase that everybody thinks is so clever in explaining the world and net zero is, you might think, to do with deep throat in Watergate, but it isn't. It's the movie by, rather poor movie in my view, Alan J. Pakula, All the President's Men, when the actor portraying Deep Throat says follow the money. So when people say follow the money, you know, there's all these subsidies. It's true. There's all these university posts. It's true. There's all these backhanders. It's true. But that's description, not explanation, Mark. We have to go a little further. And I think the real thing that your program needs to address in the next few months is that behind all of this net zero stuff is a way, unconsciously more than consciously, of depressing our living standards, of raising profitability, of getting us accustomed to poverty and all of those things. Because if the fate of the planet is at stake, if we're all going to die, not in a war with Taiwan or a war around Ukraine or around Gaza and Yemen, but we're all going to die because we're consuming too much, then, you know, everybody must act now to do everything. And that's the only thing that will suffice. So, you know, we've got to be able to deal with those arguments, not just by throwing mud.
I agree. I mean, that's absolutely true. And I mean, I look at this as the intentional rationing slash collapse of energy, food, transportation, freedom of movement, and our free speech. And it's all happening with rapidity. And they're using crises to implement this agenda. So you look back throughout history, the ruling class governing elite has always found ways where the rest of us can't be free. It invariably involves a crisis, invariably involves emergency decrees, whether it's terrorism, a virus, they want to do climate emergency powers now here in the United States. So when you say fight back with intellect, can you just expand? Like, let's use Europe as an example, the farmers. To me, Netherlands fought back. The farmers formed their own political party, the BBB, which I can't remember off the top of my head what that stands for, but they're now part of a coalition fighting it within. The public seemed to support them. Throughout Europe, whether it's Sweden, Poland, Romania, France, the gates of the EU, these farmers are fighting back. You mentioned they need intellect as well, but look, so give me your model. Because we need help, and I'm not saying this skeptically of you. I'm saying it like, give us your vision of how you would fight this back, how you'd fight back against this whole net zero agenda, using the farmers as an example and the war on agriculture, if you will, or the agricultural restrictions.
Well, I think, you know, we need good graphics, we need good infographics, we need good arguments, and there are all sorts of things you could say. The tractors depend on fossil fuels. There are one or two electric tractors under development. This is what I mean about conceding to your opponents when they're right. That I checked it out. That, you know, there are electric tractors. There are not many electric airplanes, and, you know, there's no electric tanks on the battlefield in Ukraine. So pretty much everything still, even in obviously in farming, is done by fossil fuels. What are they going to do? Oh, well, they're going to move to EV tractors. How long is that going to take? How much is that going to cost? Where are the charging points in the middle of 54 hectares, as we have it in Europe, or acres, as Brits and Americans have it? There are no charging points in the middle of a farm, right? So, you know, somebody has to explain that this is impractical. That it's not an intentional thing by the ruling class, Mark. You're sounding a bit left-wing there, the old sort. A lot of the time, as you and I know, they're not conspiracies. It's kind of incoherent. They don't have much coherence. If you look at Biden's sentences or Trump's ideas, not a lot of coherence there. So they genuinely believe, let's be nice to them, they genuinely believe that the planet is burning, like the UN Secretary General said, Antonio Guterres. They're wrong, but it's not all a Machiavellian manipulation. They believe in that stuff. They want the farmers to do less and to stop using fossil fuels, not because they're intrinsically anti-farmer, although you might think that because they're very out of touch with anywhere outside Brussels or London or Washington, but because they're scared stiff about the world dying. Why did they come to that view? Well, it wasn't just ecological that they come to that view. They reach a sort of end of days scenario by getting depressed about the past 20 years through the COVID episode, through the inadequacy of our leaders. Now, Mark, you're looking at your notes. Am I boring you, or is it making any sense?
Not at all. Well,
the readers are coming in. The viewers are coming in.
I was looking for, I'm sorry about that. I was looking for a quote from a historian, a Nazi historian, the New York Times featured, about totalitarian regimes, specifically the Nazis in this case, using bureaucracy to enforce magical beliefs. And what triggered it is what you said, James, about they're not, you know, they believe in this stuff. And how is this going to happen with farmers? You know, how practical, how much? I would argue they don't really care. I don't think it's what you say. I've said many times that they actually believe that COVID lockdowns and climate emergency declaration, wartime powers are saving us from ourselves. They believe if the general population is left to themselves, we'll create virus deaths, will create inequity, environmental destruction, a climate crisis, and they're here to help us, sort of the administrative state. But that's only one aspect of it. When I say the ruling class, because there's also the profiteers, there's the ideologues, the true believers, but there's also the power hungry. And I believe, you know, coming from like the World Economic Forum and the corporate government collusion, many aspects. This, and you said I sat at left wing. I don't mind sounding left wing on that. I mean, I really do believe, I wouldn't use the word conspiracy, but it's a convergence of interests that you can go back in history and look at. So, I mean, I wanted to get to that quote.
Well, you know, it's difficult to get the balance right. You know, they know what they're doing a bit, but all I'm trying to say is, you know, they're not in charge of events. They don't have a whole plan A about it, you know, still less a plan B. You know, they are largely acting on impulses, on the protestations of their young kids and all of those things. And they do link up. They do. You know, Watergate was a real conspiracy. JFK's assassination was a real conspiracy, very probably. But when the right says, you know, all of this is one big spider's web, it doesn't tell you anything about what to do next. If anything, it leads to impotence. You know, these forces are so great, you know, there's nothing I can do. You know, they're not. If we confront them with the ideas, not just the joining the dots.
I agree with you that creates impulse. But just let's stick with net zero for a second. I'm going to try to push back on one key point. I don't think it's just, oh, this is what young people want. I mean, you go back to 1992. You have the United Nations Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. They sign on to that. The Earth Summit Treaty, which then gets ratified, sets forth this sustainable development agenda. This was a detailed, open plan read into the text of the United States Congress and adopted in localities around the world. And this laid the foundation, this whole meeting, for the whole UN Climate Treaty Agreement. In the case of net zero and what you're seeing in Europe, they're coming after restrictions on energy with magical beliefs that solar and wind are going to take over. This is multi-decadal. You can go back 20 years. You can go back 30 years. Read the same exact rhetoric. It's in a plan, and it's happening, and they're implementing it. When we warn, like, France banning flights at 2.5 hours or less is all part of an agenda that the BBC writes about. It's not a question of when flights will be restricted. Bloomberg writes about climate compliance costs designed to make flying cheap airline travel a thing of the past. In the world of EVs, just to give you an example, corporate banks are saying they're not going to give out car loans to people who buy gas-powered cars. The World Bank former head Nicholas Stern told automakers that the international financial community may not be funding gas-powered cars. You have cities in Colorado, California, following this rhetoric, following the game plan, which has been around for at least 30 years, specifically on net zero. They say we're not going to build new gas stations. So I don't believe it's as simple as, oh, these are just a bunch of liberals who listening to their kids and feeling pressure. They're not really thinking it through. Yeah. So the politicians, I agree with you, but not the administrators, not the bureaucrats, and not the international organizations implementing it. But I agree with you, that creates impotence. Even listening to myself, I want to give up. So I'm not arguing with you there. I don't think we're in disagreement, but yeah. I don't want you to, I just wanted to make a strong point that I do think it's part of a long-term plan and that it is by design.
Yeah, there is, I can see it and I believe it. And a few years ago, I'd have bought more of it, but I think what is underestimated is, you know, the general descent into irrationality. When Guterres says the world is burning, all right. But then you've got Greens in Germany who are just preventing the Tesla plant being built there near Berlin because of apparently what is said in the right-wing press in Britain, there's a few trees going to be knocked down. So even electric cars aren't good enough for them. And Greta Thunberg, I've written about it, if anybody can spell my name while you're watching the program, she came out against wind turbines, you know, big time, because indigenous peoples, Mark, were being threatened. So you know, they do have a plan, but it's a free-floating kind of plan. It's the next thing that comes into their head. Of course, the employers and the capitalists and the banks and the state, the bureaucrats and the academics and the media are going to join in with that. But they're not all always singing it on the same hymn sheet, because they have lost the power of reason in the past 20 years, really, in 20 to 30 years. Net zero wasn't talked about in 1992. That's a more recent catchphrase, well, right?
Last few years. Sustainable development.
You're absolutely right. It's all in my book. The groundwork was set in Rio, and you can go back even earlier. The real groundwork was set by the environmentalist Schumacher, and Schumacher, Small is Beautiful, 1973. This is what you used to get from a British education, date and the author. You don't get it anymore. And, you know, that was Small is Beautiful. It's a terribly influential idea. You know, think global, act local, same era from the 70s. So the near zero thing is, as you rightly say, is a more obvious, still implicit, obvious suggestion that your consumption should head towards net zero. I never made that point before, but I think that's the ring in the phrase, right? They say it's about net zero carbon. Well, what they're really saying is, I'll do it backwards for you, is can you adjust down, Mark? You know, turn that fridge off a bit. Nothing will go wrong with the food and all the rest of it. That is very worrying. And they don't consciously think that. They think that's what's going to be required if we're to save the planet. But it has a free-floating character. The next thing you'll find is that plants are bad for CO2 or bad for the atmosphere, or that the soil is a new source of CO2 and so on. You know, it will alight on anything that reflects their sort of latest fear, and it's not that coherent.
All right. Well, this is great discussion, brother. We have to take a break. We're talking to James Woodhausen. We will continue this. We'll be right back after these messages on Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. Stay tuned.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you will never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we remove the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the suspects in question. The two occupants look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
Examining the issues. This is Unleashed with Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. All right, we're talking with James Woodhausen. His book is called Energized, and you can find out more about him at woodhausen.com, but it's not spelled for us Americans the way you might expect. It's Wood, W-O-U-D, Housen, H-U-Y-S-E-N.com. So, please go take a look. Thank you for this discussion. I want to, since we seem to be on how to fight this, let's go back to March of 2020 or even January 2020. The whole world decided to go crazy, in my view, and the World Health Organization sent delegates to China, and they said, if you want to stop this virus, copy China. Do what China's doing. And at the time, it took a few months, but pretty much the entire world, including the once free Western world, jumped off that cliff and did unprecedented lockdowns and stay at home orders and closing churches and canceling weddings and funerals and medical procedures. And it was, you know, unprecedented in peacetime in the once free West, I would argue. Do you think that was just opportunism? Or do you think that was part of a larger plan? They were sort of, in other words, just so we're clear, I'm not alleging a conspiracy necessarily, but think of it in the US, we have gun control activists, right? They wait for a school shooting to then introduce legislation and jump all over it in the media. Was the powers that be, the people who want more control, ideologically inclined to want to govern the I guess you'd call it the administrative state, which really came to fruition here in 1913 with Woodrow Wilson being presented the idea and trying to implement it, you know, the idea of rule by expertocracy. Do you think in March of 2020, when the world went crazy, in my view, that that was a massive advance for the, you know, the enemies of freedom, so to speak?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. You know, their denial of democratic rights, their denial of free speech, their failure to educate a generation of children, you know, all of that is completely reprehensible. I'm giving you my best English adjectives right now. So, you know, was it opportunism or was it part of a long-term plan? Well, we discussed that and I think we agree it's a bit of both. I feel the right puts too much of an emphasis on conspiracy, but the left likes that too. Marjorie Taylor Greene was right about that. You know, the left loves conspiracy. So I'm anxious to avoid that. I think the thing is, what one needs to remember, Mark, is that the free-floating fear, the culture of fear, fully predates the COVID panic. It's been going for a long, long time. And same as the technocratic impulse, right? The technocratic impulse to outsource your political decisions away from government, elected government, towards the experts, that's been going a fair amount of time. So when COVID came along, and given also China's growing economic and cultural weight in the world, then they were already not so much to say, right, here's our great chance to, you know, smash the workers and get everybody to agree a whole new world. That's Naomi Klein, the shock doctrine. And you were kind of channeling it a little bit. I don't buy it. Too conspiratorial. Not you, her, right? She's on the left. I don't think it's the left. But the real point is they were fearful of disease. They're fearful of other people. They dislike other people and contact with other people. Old Tom Wolfe was observing that with the Bonfire of the Vanities, where the famous line comes early in the novel, you've got to have isolation. You remember that? Sherman McCoy says, you've got to have isolation. So they're all pre-prepped for something like this. And they'd had plenty of false alarms. And then the real deal came along and China said, do this. And the WHO, which had raised the completely bizarre alarms about avian flu before, they were in the mood to go crazy about it because they thought everybody would die. So it's the wider psychological and cultural preface to the COVID thing that explains it more than the opportunism or the desire to implement a long-standing plan. You know, it had all of those elements. But whatever it was, it could have been a completely different disease. They'd probably have done something very similar.
True. I agree with that. In terms of emergency powers, now, you know, in my book, The Great Reset, I quoted a BBC historian, I can't remember the name of the university in England, but he explains that throughout history, during emergency powers, during times of crisis, the greatest violations of human rights have occurred, whether it was Rome's descent from a republic to an empire throughout the Middle Ages, emergency power, the Nazis, 1940s, emergency power, 9/11, COVID. And now, of course, they want climate. And I don't know what it would do in Europe, but in the U.S., it would give Joe Biden 130 wartime powers by which he could bypass Congress and democracy. And now we hear that right before I went to Dubai to the UN Climate Summit, 200 medical journals led by the British medical journal, the esteemed prestigious, are urging climate change be rolled into a public health threat. And this is what the World Health Organization coming up in Geneva, Switzerland in May, one of the things they're considering with all these amendments is to rate climate change essentially merge it into a public health threat, which then gives unelected bureaucrats, the expert class, more control. Your thoughts on all of that?
Well, I'm aghast to hear it. I'm not surprised by the BMJ or the Lancet. They have completely descended from the world of science. So that's what I meant about the, you know, destruction of rationality. These are, were august, you know, widely regarded scientific journals. They now won't, in the case of the Lancet, they will not describe a woman as a woman on their front cover. And, you know, they their desire to aggrandize themselves and to make doctors the new climate experts, you know, who'd have thunk it? But as soon as you've heard it, you know, of course they're going to. That's what I meant about the free floating stuff. Well, we got another idea to scare people or to get people to take this seriously. You know, oh, another one will do, you know, and it's very worrying. We need to. Raise this point about consumption, living standards, grinding working class people and middle class people down through their repression of movement, their repression of diet, and above all, their repression of opinion. You know, that's the most dangerous thing. If we're not allowed to protest, we're really screwed, you know, and that's something. And going back to my early point about conceding to your rivals, I don't like to concede, but I will defend the right of right-wingers, including Marjorie Taylor Greene and people to the right, to spout their views. If they don't spout them, how can I attack them? We've got to uphold that, you know, including especially of our opponents. You know, that's something we must do.
Well, you know, when you look at the world since COVID, it just seems like everything's accelerated, and including in the United States anyway, critical race theory. We had the whole defund the police movement, George Floyd, including transgenderism. I mean, that has accelerated beyond in our pop culture, in our hospitals, the surgeries. I hear the EU is actually pulling back and not allowing the puberty blockers now, or at least.
That's the UK. UK. That won't UK. Last. It'll last that about last. 6 months. Okay. No. Oh. Keir Starmer will get in and then everybody will be, you know, unblocked or blocked or whatever it is.
So what causes, I just feel like, okay, look, you obviously, you went back to the 70s with that in history and earlier, obviously. Do you think there's a rapid acceleration since 2020 is my question? Or is this just part of the natural ebb and flow? Because in my lifetime at 55 years old, this feels unprecedented that it's always been there. Yeah, we had the New World Order back in the early 90s, and you had Paul Ehrlich wanting to add sterilization agents and drinking water in Africa, and then the U.S. to limit population back in the late 60s, early 70s. But the question is, are we in a new era, or do you just see it as same old, and this is just...
No, look, Mark, it's never the same old, same old. History isn't a history isn't a pendulum either. It's not an ebb and flow. History, what we do is not the tides. It's not a pendulum. You know, it's quite obviously that it's first grade or whatever it is. It's a mixture of continuity and change. And as a forecaster, a dubious profession, the thing, you know, everybody in forecasting always begins their speech by saying, you haven't understood the pace of change, because I'm here to tell you it's faster than you think. Now, you're not doing that, and I never do that, because that was going on way before COVID. Now, it's true what you say, which is that although we're totally infatuated, especially Americans, with the phrase exponential, which generally means quite fast at the moment, right? The your feeling that things have accelerated is not entirely wrong after the COVID crisis, because that had such a big effect on everybody's morale, on everybody staying at home, and it went on for such a long time, you know. Although, as you were also hinting, and I tried to say, it was reinforcing long-standing trends, right? It's a mixture of continuity and change, and the continuity is definitely there, but the step up in change is definitely there. And you're right to say that it embraces everything to do with trans, to do with critical race theory. It's all the same people, and it's all the same rubbish ideas. But to say that they're rubbish ideas doesn't mean that we've confronted them. We really have to get into it. Now, you know, let's do a little quiz for ourselves. How many chromosomes do you have in your body? I ought to know. I think it's 6 million, but it might be 6 billion, right? So until we've got those facts, I'm not a biologist. Yeah. Until we've got those facts at our fingertips, I know that an XY chromosome is not the same as an XX one, right? That much I know. But until we've got those facts at our fingertips placed in a entertaining but logical argument, you know, then we're going to be on the back foot because these people have the moment and they might lose in America. They're likely to win in Britain, although the disenchantment will be the day after Keir Starmer is elected, or 6 months I give him before things really get bad. So we've got to prepare. Reading more books. The left never did that. The right was better at it than the left. Anyway, left and right aren't important. That's important. Your own feelings about the elite, about the technocracy, about net zero, wherever you're coming from, I'm unfamiliar with your politics, Mark, but wherever you're coming from, I mostly endorse it. And we got to get together. That's one thing people on the right need to remember about some people on the left. I think you've covered this in your show, that there's more that unites us than divides us, especially at a moment when the left and right doesn't really do it anymore. You know.
Yeah,
Biden's left wing. Biden's not left wing. He's pretty right wing. You know, yes, where I come from.
He's very establishment corporate. Huh. And I think so. All right, well, we're out of time. This was a fascinating discussion. James Woodhousen, jameswoodhousen.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And I'd like to have you back on again. This is great.
I'd love to come back on. Let's have a beer.
All right, Unleashed with Mark Morano on TNT. We'll be back with next in the next hour. Stay tuned.